Welcome back to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Let's get right on into animal news here. The habitats which fish depend on for spawning, feeding, and protection are at risk. The Sustainable Fisheries Act, which was signed into law on October 11, 1996, contains important mandates to end overfishing, rebuild overfished stocks, minimize bycatch, which are trash fish, according to the fishermen, and protect essential fish habitat. To reverse continuing fish habitat losses, the Sustainable Fisheries Act requires that essential fish habitat, which is defined as those waters and substrate necessary for fish spawning, breeding, feeding, and growth to maturity, be identified and protected. The National Marine Fisheries Service and the Regional Fishery Management Councils are required to take action to protect essential fish habitat from both fishing and non-fishing threats. The councils are required to assess the impact of all fishing activities and adopt management measures to minimize any adverse impacts. On November 8, 1999, the National Marine Fisheries Service reopened the comment period on the regulations that implement the Sustainable Fisheries Act essential fish habitat requirements. The regulations describe how essential fish habitat should be identified, the adverse impacts from fishing on that habitat should be evaluated and minimized, and the National Marine Fisheries should identify terrestrial action that can damage essential fish habitat, and how it should make recommendations to federal agencies on ways to minimize or mitigate the damage. In short, these regulations add important details to the Sustainable Fisheries Act habitat mandates, which are critical for the protection of fish habitat. A broad coalition of industry groups, ranging from forest products to cattle to electric generators to home builders, has been aggressively lobbying the National Marine Fisheries Service and Congress to put the essential fish habitat regulatory program and its legal underpinnings. They successfully prevented the agency from issuing final regulations and now have cajoled it into soliciting additional public comment. This despite the fact that the National Marine Fisheries Service has already solicited public comments on this rule for over half a year. And another 45 days of public comment are clearly not necessary, but the new comment period is designed to delay finalization of the essential fish habitat regulations. Don't let this happen. Send your comments supporting enhanced essential fish habitats to EFH Coordinator Office of Habitat Conservation, National Marine Fisheries Service, 1315 East West Highway, Silver Springs, Maryland, 20910. That address again, EFH Coordinator Office of Habitat Conservation, National Marine Fisheries Service, you can abbreviate that NMFS if you want to, 1315 East West Highway, Silver Spring, Maryland, 20910. And those comments should be submitted prior to December 23rd. Two men were arrested earlier this month after a Minnesota grand jury issued the first ever indictment for illegally shooting gray wolves in northern Minnesota. Danny Ray Olson is said to have killed a wolf on February 6th of this year and is accused of possessing an unregistered gun silencer. Verlin Lewis Bertin is believed to have killed two wolves. Both face 6 months in prison and or a $5,000 fine. Olson also faces up to 10 years in prison and a $250,000 fine for felony possession of the silencer. Agent Dickinson of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service noted that they have a toll-free number, 1-800-532-2887. That number again, 1-800-532-2887, for reporting information about anyone killing or harming wolves in Minnesota, Wisconsin, or Michigan. Callers remain anonymous and receive a reward if their information leads to an arrest or a conviction. Local environmental groups are pleased to see this enforcement action and have expressed concerns that Minnesota's hotly debated wolf management plan will lack any provisions for discouraging illegal wolf hunting. And attempts to end the war over water between Georgia and Alabama are threatening at least one endangered species. The water-sharing plan between the two states may further threaten the Etowah darter, a fish already on the endangered species list because of destruction of its habitat by dams, timber cutting, and mining in its habitat near Rome, Georgia. The area is also home to the endangered Cherokee darter. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service representatives say the Etowah and Oostenaula rivers may hold more endangered fish and invertebrates than any other rivers in the southeast. Officials of both states continue reviewing proposals for water sharing amid concerns for the potential extinction of these species. And some of the most feared creatures on Earth, sharks, rattlesnakes, and poisonous tarantula spiders, are so close to extinction they are now in need of protection other than their own venom. The great white shark and the whale shark, the American timber rattlesnake, and 11 known species of Eastern Hemisphere tarantulas are among the species the United States wildlife officials have identified as in need of protection. A ban on international trade on them and their parts would allow. The U.S. is proposing to add a number of species to the CITES list of protected species. Some of these, including the timber rattlesnake and spotted turtle, are found only in the United States. Others, such as the great white shark and whale shark, are found in waters worldwide. The U.S. is also sponsoring or co-sponsoring the listing of non-U.S. species, including the 15 or so Mantella frog species of Madagascar, the 9 species of Southeast Asian box turtles, and the 11 known species of Eastern Hemisphere tarantulas. However, notably absent from this list is the big-leaf mahogany, a valuable tree species which several forest conservation groups have urged the U.S. to propose for listing earlier this year. The Natural Resources Defense Council and Defenders of Wildlife have pushed for listing of tree species at a number of recent CITES meetings. And two South Florida men were sentenced recently for trafficking in rare reptiles protected by the U.S. and international law. Dwayne Cunningham and Robert Lawrissey were found guilty in last May of conspiring to violate the Lacey Act, a federal smuggling law, and the International Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Fauna and Flora, also known as CITES. The men were poaching a number of protected reptile species found on several West Indies islands and smuggling them into the U.S. aboard cruise ships that employed Cunningham as a comedian and Lawrissey as a dive instructor. Cunningham was sentenced to 14 months in jail and 2 years probation. Lawrissey received 2 years in jail and 2 years of probation. Several of the smuggled iguana and tortoise species exist only in the Bahamas, including Whale's Cay rock iguana and the Exuma Island rock iguana, which are threatened with extinction. The smuggled rock iguanas and lesser Antillean iguanas are often marketed for as much as $1,000 each. To conceal the smuggling of Exuma Island rock iguanas, Cunningham obtained a permit from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for the captive breeding of species listed under the Endangered Species Act to create the impression that his sale of these reptiles stemmed from a viable domestic breeding program rather than the smuggling of wild animals. Traffic in rare species and threatens our environment, said U.S. Assistant Attorney Lois Schiffer. We will take whatever steps we can here and abroad to stop the black market in these protected species. However, a lack of information has led the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to deny listing under the Endangered Species Act for the Santa Monica Mountains hairstreak butterfly, a species known to occur only in the southern Santa Monica Mountains. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was petitioned to list the butterfly as endangered because of habitat fragmentation, but the information contained in the petition about the life history, habitat needs, range, and threats to the butterfly was not adequate for the species to be considered for listing. The Santa Monica Mountains hairstreak butterfly was first discovered in 1973. It is believed the insect's larvae feed solely on the young shoots of coastal live oak trees, although this is based on very few observations. If you have any information about the Santa Monica Mountains hairstreak butterfly and any research on the distribution, life history, habitat needs, and threats facing the species, please send them to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Field Supervisor Ventura Fish and Wildlife Office, 2493B Portola Road, Ventura, California, 93003. Once again, that address for information on the Santa Monica Mountains hairstreak butterfly. If you have any, please send it to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Field Supervisor Ventura Fish and Wildlife Office, 2493B Portola Road, Ventura, California, 93003. The butterfly will thank you, and Uncle Dennis will thank you, too. In Canada, polar bears on the Hudson Bay have been having trouble finding enough seals to eat because of global warming, according to three scientists at the Canadian Wildlife Service. Weight for both male and female polar bears is declining, and female bears are having fewer cubs. In a paper published in the current issue of Arctic, a scholarly journal issued by the Arctic Institute of North America, Ian Sterling, Nicholas Lunn, and John Iacosa say that from 1981 to 1998, the condition of adult male and female polar bears has declined significantly in western Hudson Bay. Over the same period, the breakup of sea ice in the area has been occurring earlier and earlier. The earlier the breakup of the ice in spring, the poorer the condition of the bears that are coming ashore, the scientists say. Polar bears need sea ice as a platform from which to hunt ringed seals. When the ice breaks up early, the bears' ability to hunt is impaired and they come ashore hungry. Polar bears reach their lightest weight of the year in late March, just before the birth of the next cohort of ringed seal pups. This fact suggests that it is the success of their hunting in spring and early summer that enables them to maximize the body reserves necessary for survival, reproduction, and nursing of cubs throughout the rest of the year, the scientists report. The ultimate factor responsible for the earlier breakup in western Hudson Bay appears to be long-term warming trends in April and June atmospheric temperatures, the report says, and I wonder what's causing that. A federal judge in Hawaii has issued a ruling that the Hawaiian-based longline fishery is operating illegally. The decision, based on a lawsuit brought by a pair of environmental groups, is one more in a series of attacks on a fishing method responsible for the deaths of thousands of seabirds and turtles around the world. Hawaii Federal District Court Judge David Ezra ruled that the National Marine Fisheries Service, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and the Secretary of Commerce William Daley violated the National Environmental Policy Act by allowing the longline fishery to operate without first preparing an environmental assessment or environmental impact statement. The lawsuit was filed last February by the Sea Turtle Restoration Project of Turtle Island Restoration Network and the Center for Marine Conservation, represented by the Earth Justice Legal Defense Fund. However, anticipating the court's ruling, the defendants announced last month they would prepare an environmental impact statement assessing the environmental impacts of the fishery, but argued that the fishery should be allowed to continue to operate without change during the 2 years required to prepare the EIS. Noting that the longline fishery catches hundreds of threatened or endangered sea turtles, Judge Ezra held that, quote, the harm to the turtles is incalculable and a carefully monitored injunction during the EIS preparation period is warranted. On Monday, Ezra ordered thousands of square miles of the Pacific Ocean closed to longline fishing to reduce the longliner's impacts on sea turtles. The closure, which extends north of 28 degrees north latitude, east of 168 degrees west longitude, and west of 158 degrees west longitude, becomes effective within 30 days and will remain in effect until the EIS is complete. Todd Steiner, director of the Sea Turtle Restoration Project, said, "This is exactly the action we need to start us on a solid path to saving the critically endangered leatherback sea turtles. Commercial fishing activities must be conducted responsibly to protect marine biodiversity and eliminate the wasteful killing of these magnificent animals." In Washington, D.C., the Senate passed a bill to prohibit interstate sales of so-called crush videos, in which animals are tortured and crushed to death by women in high-heeled shoes. The House of Representatives approved the bill last month by a 372-42 vote. The bill now goes to President Clinton, who is expected to sign it into law in the next few weeks. Crush videos represented one of the most loathsome abuses imaginable, according to Wayne Pacell, Senior Vice President of the Humane Society of the U.S. Undercover research and investigation by the Humane Society of the United States has turned up thousands of crush video titles available for purchase on the internet and through specialty vendors catering to the sadistic tastes of tragically disturbed individuals. The animals, including kittens, mice, frogs, goldfish, chickens, lizards, and guinea pigs, are often tortured before being crushed to death behind a woman's high heel or her butt. This inhumane industry needs to be shut down, and this legislation is a strong step toward giving law enforcement agencies the power to begin that process. No one should profit from the mutilation of animals for entertainment, Pacell said. And the first whale and dolphin sanctuary in the Mediterranean Sea has been created. The ministers of the environment in Italy, France, and Monaco signed a treaty in Rome a few days ago designating an area twice the size of Switzerland, about 32,000 square miles, as a new sanctuary. It lies between the French Côte d'Azur, Monaco, and the Ligurian coast of Italy, and the islands of Corsica and Sardinia. It will be the largest marine protected area in the Mediterranean. 13 different whales and dolphins live in the sanctuary area, and 7 can be seen there year-round. These are pilot whales, fin whales, sperm whales, common dolphins, striped dolphins, bottlenose dolphins, and Risso's dolphins. The new sanctuary is a result of a 10-year effort led by the Worldwide Fund for Nature, European Conservation, and other marine mammal protection groups. This is the first time in the Northern Hemisphere that several countries have established a marine protected area which includes international waters, said Dr. Claude Martin, the World Wildlife Fund's Director General. As part of the event in Rome, the new sanctuary was designated as a gift to the Earth under the World Wildlife Fund's Living Planet campaign. Gifts of this nature are commitments by governments, corporations, or individuals to help preserve the planet's natural wealth. The treaty creating the whale and dolphin sanctuary commits France, Italy, and Monaco to coordinate monitoring activities and to intensify efforts against both land-based and marine sources of pollution. The three countries will coordinate research programs and public awareness campaigns about the marine mammals and their environment. The existing ban on drift net fishing will be enforced, and there will be a ban on offshore boating competition and supervision of whale watching activities. The new protected area is the most important feeding ground for whales and dolphins. The number of dolphins and whales is 2 to 4 times higher than in the rest of the Mediterranean Sea. The nutritionally rich Ligurian Sea is inhabited by some 2,000 whales and between 25,000 and 45,000 dolphins during the summer months. And from Canada, Canada's management plan for the Northwest Atlantic harp seal hunt is failing, says a new study soon to be published in a peer-reviewed journal, Conservation Biology. The harp seals are being killed at a rate up to 6 times as great as the government's stated precautionary plan allows, and current census methods are not adequate to detect the loss, 3 biologists have calculated. Under the Canadian government's own figures, the study shows that more seals are being landed in seal hunts in Canada and western Greenland than the population can sustain, and so the population is almost certainly declining. Biologists calculated the number of seals killed by humans, including the number of animals landed by sealers, the number of seals killed but not recovered, and the incidental catch in commercial fisheries, and found that that exceeds the levels that would be permitted by a truly precautionary management model, such as by much as 2 to 6 times. And back here in the United States, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has decided to perform a full review of the current critical habitat designations for 3 endangered beach mouse subspecies. The Earth Justice Legal Defense Fund, the Sierra Club, and the Biodiversity Legal Foundation have filed a petition earlier this year asking the agency to redesignate critical habitat for the Perdido Key beach mouse, the Alabama beach mouse, and the Chakawatachi beach mouse. For some reason, that's very hard to say. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says information in the petition indicates that a revision may be warranted, and the agency will conduct a thorough review before deciding whether to propose changes to the areas designated as critical habitat for the 3 species. The critical habitat for them now covers 2,890 acres dispersed along 34 miles of the Gulf of Mexican shoreline in Alabama and Florida. Most of this critical habitat is on federal or state-managed lands. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will accept public comment on possible revisions to those designated habitats until January 18th of next year. And federal agencies and environmentalists have reached a settlement that moves 4 rare Hawaiian invertebrates, Blackburn's sphinx moth, Newcomb's snail, the Kauai Cave wolf spider, and the Kauai Cave amphipod, a crucial step closer to protection under the Federal Endangered Species Act. The species are threatened with destruction and modification of their habitat and competition with introduced species. The 2 Kauai cave species are limited to 4 square miles of habitat, and an estimated 75% of their historic habitat has already been destroyed by development. The Newcomb snail has declined by 60% since 1925 and is restricted to 6 streams on Kauai. The Blackburn sphinx moth, Hawaii's largest native insect, was believed to be extinct until 1984 when a single population was discovered on Maui, Habitat degradation by goats and Hawaii National Guard training fires threaten their populations. And rangers and villagers killed 9 grizzly bears on Canada's western coast after large numbers of the animals began foraging in town and when their traditional supply of salmon dried up, officials said. A mother bear and 2 cubs were killed Wednesday in the most recent shootings, and 3 other bears were airlifted out of the region. Residents of the Owekono village on the central British Columbia coast say that they have never seen so many bears in town, said Tom Goltzig, the fisheries administrator for the Owekono First Nation and Indian group. He blamed the lack of salmon, which make up to 70% of the bears' diet. The area, also known as Rivers Inlet, has recorded more than 3 million sockeye salmon returning to spawn in past years, Goltzig said. This figure is expected to be 3,500 this year. It's an absolute catastrophe, he said. Conservationists blame a history of logging and overfishing in the area for the depleted salmon numbers. It wasn't likely they were going to survive, Langan said. They didn't have the fat reserves that a bear would normally have had at that time of year. And said the bears were killed because they were a threat to the community and unsuitable for relocation. Tom Rickman, researching biologist between the relationship between bears, called on the federal government to take immediate steps to help the salmon stocks recover. He warned the problem exists all along the British Columbia coast, threatening the ecology and local communities. And in other bear news, concerned that a spray intended to deter bear attacks on humans may not be effective, the EPA has ordered the manufacturer of bear paws to halt all sales. EPA will also ask distributors to pull the product from their shelves and advises people who bought the spray not to rely on it. Bear paws is made by Chem Armor of Missoula, Montana. At issue is the chemical formula used in the spray. Capsin, a chemical that makes peppers hot, also known as pepper spray, is an EPA-approved ingredient in pepper sprays used to deter attacks by dogs and bears. EPA had approved a purified form of capsin in bear paws in March of 1999. The EPA has since learned that ChemArmor substituted a much cheaper and untested active ingredient in bear paws called vanillyl pelargonamide. I guess that's about as close as I'm going to get to it. VP is chemically distinct from capsin and is not used as the active ingredient in any U.S. registered product. The EPA does not have reliable data on its chemistry, toxicity, or ecological effects or effectiveness. We don't want people going into bear country with a product on their hip that may not do its job if needed, said Tom Osag, who enforces pesticide law for EPA's Denver office. ChemArmor could apply to register bear paw with VP, Osag said, but they would have to provide data about its chemistry, its health and environmental effects and effectiveness, and they didn't do that. In their original application, they stated that capsin would be the active ingredient, and we know that capsin sprays are effective. We can't say that about the other ingredient. And in our final news tonight, a North Carolina man has pleaded guilty to illegal trafficking in carnivorous plants. Ted Allen Minton sold Venus flytraps illegally taken from the wild to international plant dealers in Holland. The Venus flytrap, native to the coastal bogs of North and South Carolina, is protected by the state of North Carolina and the Convention on International Trade of Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora. The U.S. is one of 146 nations participating in that treaty. People are fascinated by this unusual plant, which has been popularized in literature and cinema, said Sam Hamilton, Southeast Regional Director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. A victim of its own popularity, the Venus flytrap is prized by collectors worldwide. Consumer demand fuels the marketplace and contributes to the depletion of wild populations. In 1996, Minton, a plant nursery owner, sold 9,000 flytraps collected in eastern North Carolina to Hendrikus Lomerse of Holland. And Minton gave Lomerse a false U.S. Department of Agriculture certificate stating that the shipment contained Christmas ferns. Later the same year, Minton tried to send another 5,000 illegal Venus flytraps to Holland with false permits stating the shipment contained nursery-raised flytraps. Minton faces up to 5 years of incarceration and a fine up to $250,000. He pleaded guilty to a felony act and has been sentenced to only jail time served, a $2,000 fine, and 18 months of federal probation. Well, that's about all the time we have for news tonight. To get news announcements or comments from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, please send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or send your letters, donations, CDs, cassettes, or anything friendly to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Be sure to send any and all announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you'd like more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, subscribe to the Earth First Journal. They're at P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. That's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Earth First Radio is broadcast live on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, every Thursday at 8 p.m., or you can listen anytime on your computer, on the World Wide Web at radioforall.web.net. That's radioforall, the number 4, .web.net. You'll need a sound card, but the software you need is free on the website. Earth First Radio is being rebroadcast a lot of different places. If you found us on the web, ask your local station to download and rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney off the CD Keep It Wild. Earth First Radio is affiliated with the Earth First Radio Network. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening, and please tune in again. And we're going to hear some more off of Peg Millett's Clear Horizon. We heard Women Come Forth in the first half hour, and we're going to hear Spirit Horses this time.
Every breath taken in by the man who loves and by the woman who loves goes to fill the water tank where the spirit horses drink. Every breath taken in by the man who loves and by the woman who loves goes to fill the water tank where the spirit horses drink. Every breath taken in by the man who loves and by the woman who loves goes to fill the water tanks where the spirit horses drink. Every breath taken in by the man taken loves and by the woman taken loves goes to fill the water tanks where the woman horses drink. Goes to fill the water tank where the man horses drinks and by the woman taken loves goes to the fill the water tanks and by the woman who loves goes to fill the water tank where the spirit horses drinks. Every breath taken in by the man who loves and by the woman who water tanks goes to fill the water tank where the spirit horses drink.